Welcome to the official companion podcast to the brand new release movie, Stolen Girl. I'm Nicole Engelbrecht, and you're listening to the second and final episode of the Stolen Girl official companion podcast, Child Abduction in South Africa. If you haven't yet listened to episode one, you need to go back and do that now, and then come back here. In episode one, we explored the real-life case of Maureen Dabba, whose two-year-old daughter was abducted by her ex-husband and taken to Syria. The case is the basis for the brand new movie, Stolen Girl, which is out in cinemas right now. In the second part of the companion podcast, Filmfinity thought it important to share some factual information and real-world guidance around missing children. There's honestly nothing I like more than being able to use this platform for education and creating awareness. And with all the big celeb names starring in Stolen Girl, I think it's the perfect opportunity to shift some of that focus onto the serious issues the movie highlights. Based on extraordinary real-life events, Stolen Girl follows a determined mother played by Kate Beckinsale, whose world is shattered when her ex-husband Kareem abducts the young daughter Amina and flees to the Middle East. Desperate to bring her child home, Maureen teams up with Robson, played by Scott Eastwood, an enigmatic ex-Marine and child abduction specialist. Their mission takes them to Beirut, where they dive into a treacherous web of international espionage, betrayal, and corruption. As time runs out, Maureen faces the hardest choice of her life, reclaiming her daughter or leaving her behind for her own safety. The type of abduction highlighted in the film and by Maureen Dabba's case and work is, of course, parental abduction, specifically when that abduction takes place across international borders, which makes things so much trickier, as we definitely learned from Maureen's story. So in today's episode, we'll focus a bit more on that specific topic because it's not nearly as uncommon as you think. But children also go missing for a whole host of other reasons. And general information about the world of the missing, how investigations are run, and what we can do to keep children safe is equally important. So we'll be delving into all of that too. Later in the episode, I'll be joined by Bianca van Asveergen, criminologist and national coordinator for the organisation Missing Children South Africa. Bianca will share some of her incredible insights from years of working with missing children's cases. There are many reasons why a child may go missing, including runaway situations, parental abduction, human trafficking, or being lost or injured. In most cases, a missing child is the ultimate nightmare for any parent. I say most cases because, of course, sometimes it is the parent themselves that has caused the child to go missing. But I think you'd be far stretched to find a single parent who hasn't had at least one heart-stopping moment when they looked away for just a second in a busy shop or even their own backyard, and lost track of their child. The empty space where your child used to be is suddenly filled with 1,000 possibilities of what may have happened to them, and none of them are good. In most cases, your child reappears in a few minutes. You find them browsing through toys in the next aisle over, or see they've climbed over the fence to fetch their ball. And although your heart still pounds in your ears for a second, you breathe a sigh of relief and whisper a thank you that you've not yet become one of the thousands of parents every year for whom that moment of relief never comes. I figured out a long time ago that often when we're so terrified of something happening to us, we'll shut ourselves down to any information around it. So for the vast majority of people who really don't ever want to think about opening a missing persons case for their child, they'll never even think to figure out what the process would be if that terrible day came, and they had to make that report. But, like life insurance and CPR, we might not want to think about the devastating situation that might lead us to needing to know this stuff. But it can also literally mean the difference between life and death if we do. And when that life is a child's, our child, or someone close to us, do you really want to be the one who doesn't know what to do? The first thing to get out of the way is that there is no waiting period to report a person is missing. You do not need to wait 24 or 48 hours. If you have reason to believe that someone close to you has gone missing, you can report it immediately. Where children are concerned, it is even more important to err on the side of caution and get the police involved as quickly as possible. If a police officer refuses to take your report, ask to speak with the station commander. Even if you do not have everything with you that's required to open the docket, the case can still be opened and those elements can be added later. While it's preferable to go to the police station in the area where the missing person was last seen, this is also not a reason for an officer to turn you away. It is the officer's responsibility to take the report and ensure it is transferred to the correct jurisdiction. Although I use the term docket here, a missing persons case is technically an inquiry file until a crime is proven to have occurred. Another myth related to missing person reporting is that you have to be a family member to report someone missing. This is completely untrue. Many people work far away from their families, and some don't have partners or next of kin to speak of. In these cases, co-workers or friends are just as empowered to alert police to a missing person. Once the inquiry file is opened, it will be the investigating officer's job to speak with anyone closely related to the missing person as part of establishing their whereabouts. Where children are concerned, this becomes a little more of a grey area, as if you are not the child's direct caregiver, you may need to explain why the parent or guardian cannot be there. However, there is nothing stopping a teacher or concerned neighbour from informing a police officer about a child who has not been seen for a while. Children, like adults, are most frequently harmed by those close to them, and as such, may not be reported missing by their families. At the police station, you'll be given an SAP555A form to complete. The form will ask for as much detail as you have about the missing person, including physical characteristics, workplace for adults, school information for children, people they associate with, places they frequent, and cell phone numbers they may use. If you're reporting someone close to you as missing, ensure that you take a current photograph with you to the police station. And if the person is an adult, it may be helpful to take the details of their cell phone provider with you to facilitate faster application for a cell phone inquiry. If you don't have a printed photograph, you should be able to send a digital one to the officer and they can print it from their office printer. As the reporter, you will be required to provide your full name and contact details. And when signing the form, you'll see a disclaimer at the end that confirms that you are not knowingly opening a false inquiry. Believe it or not, it's not unheard of for abusive and controlling individuals to attempt to weaponize the SAPS against their victim by claiming they've gone missing. Their hope is that police will lead them to the victim's location. In South Africa, opening a false case can lead to charges of perjury, which carry penalties including fines and imprisonment of up to 10 years. By signing the SAP555A form, you also give permission for the SAPS to share information you've provided publicly. This becomes especially important where the publication of photographs of minors is concerned. Once the form is complete, the police member in the Client Service Centre, or CSC, will enter the information into the Occurrence Book, or OB, and you'll be provided with an OB number, which serves to identify the investigation. At this point, the CSC commander or their direct subordinate will look over the information provided and decide the route forward. From here, the route the inquiry takes through the police system depends on whether the missing person is a minor or an adult. All cases involving minors are handled by the Family Violence, Child Protection and Sexual Offences Unit. Adult cases are investigated by an investigating officer on duty from the station at which the inquiry is opened. The process after this is relatively similar, although child cases will always hold far more urgency. The investigating officer contacts the person who reported the individual missing and interviews family members, friends, and co-workers. This should lead to other forms of detection, such as cell phone pinging, CCTV footage collection, and bank account activity surveillance. Most of these forms of investigation require warrants. The police cannot just pull your cell phone and bank records without a very good reason. As the family member of the missing person, you can assist by providing cell phone contact information and banking information available to you. At this point, a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff happens that the family is usually not privy to. If your missing person is an adult, their name will be checked against various databases to see whether they have any active warrants, previous charges, or known gang affiliations. This information may help to guide the investigation. The investigating officer also then submits the docket to their provincial branch of the SAPS's Bureau for Missing Persons. The provincial office will verify the information provided and escalate it to the national office. All of this happens simultaneously with the investigation and is not intended to be a delay point, but rather an enhancement to the investigation. The Bureau is in charge of utilizing the media and other organizations to spread the word around missing persons. The person's photograph and information will be published on the SAPS's website and social media platforms. The Bureau then works together with the SAPS's Communication Services Department in the province to reach out to local newspapers and NGOs. This system of managing where missing person information is published is vital because if the person is found, the SAPS knows exactly which entities to contact to cancel the distribution. This helps to avoid a situation where someone who may have been missing for mental health reasons, for instance, is traumatized by seeing their missing persons poster continuously shared on social media. It also helps families whose loved ones have been found deceased to not have to deal with constantly being asked by curious individuals on social media whether the missing person has been found. As a reporter of a missing person, you also have the responsibility to let the police know if the missing person is found. An inquiry can only be closed through the completion of an SAP 292 form, which must be included in the docket along with verification of the missing person's status. This includes a statement from the investigating officer that they've laid eyes on and spoken with the missing person, or a death certificate if the person is found deceased. This is then uploaded to the National Bureau for Missing Persons so the active case can be cancelled. The missing person's details remain on the system, though, as if they go missing again, this helps to connect with previous dockets and possibly speed up the investigation. If a missing person is not found within a few days or there is suspicion that they may be deceased, the family will be asked to provide DNA samples to the Forensic Services Victim Identification Center. The sample will be compared with any unidentified remains discovered or even unconscious individuals in hospital who are unable to identify themselves. Of course, the goal is never to get to this point. But I do think it's empowering to know what you need to do in that situation and we'll discuss some of these elements of the process in deeper detail in my interview with Bianca van Asvegen, which I think it's right about time to get into now.
I'm Bianca van Asvegen, criminologist and national coordinator for the organization Missing Children South Africa. I got involved with the organization while studying criminology, and it's such an interesting field in the sense of each case is basically a puzzle that you have to build. There's never a dull moment. Things change every single day, and it's just so nice to be able to give families some answers and also reunite a family. Whether it's a missing child or missing adult, it just makes it's all worth it at the end of the day doing the job that I'm doing.
I've discovered over the years that it's not at all easy to get a job using a criminology qualification. So I think Bianca's use of her qualification in this context is really innovative and clever.
It is, especially with criminology. Criminology usually is more research orientated. But with missing persons cases, you get to do with everything, whether it is a serial killer, for instance, whether it's a serial rapist, whether it's human trafficking, kidnapping, just a child running away from home due to abuse. There's so many different aspects to working in the missing persons field. So it's very interesting. And it also, it kind of has its side of profiling with it.
I asked Bianca to give us some information on Missing Children South Africa, what the organization does, and how it fits into the missing persons landscape in South Africa.
So Missing Children South Africa is a non-profit organization. The organization started in 2007 because of two little girls that went missing, one Anastasia Visa, and the other one Shaldine Himan, one in the Western Cape and one in Pretoria. And that is actually where the need was seen to assist the public when a child or a person goes missing. The general public didn't know how the reporting works, how to distribute or create the awareness regarding a child or person that goes missing. So that's where the idea of Missing Children South Africa actually started. So we got involved, we started helping, creating the awareness regarding the child that went missing. We work very closely with the South African police services, all necessary units, whatever needs be when a child or a person goes missing. So what we also do is we create a flyer on social media that we create the awareness. We follow up on all leads. We liaise with the police. We liaise with the families and make sure everything possible is being done to find the person or the child that is missing. The other aspect of the organization is creating awareness. Safety education is vital, especially for our children. So we go into our communities, we go to schools, we go educate our children and parents on safety. That is really important because prevention is always better than cure.
All such vital work. And I think that it's important to truly understand what this organization does, because as an ordinary member of the public, it might be easy to assume that all they do is issue and distribute flyers on social media. And that is certainly not the case.
No, definitely. I mean, this work is also not an 8-to-5 job. It's a 24-hour job that you're always on call. We go out, like I said, we work with the police, we follow up on leads. So in the background behind the flyer, there's so many work that goes into when it comes to a missing persons case.
Bianca has been immersed in the world of missing people for many years now. And I wondered how much she'd seen the landscape of this sector change over the years, if at all.
It's changed so much, and I think it's changing daily, especially if we look at back then. The last stats that we received actually from the Missing Persons Bureau was in 2013, where one child goes missing every 5 hours. Today, unfortunately, we don't have statistics because there's so many cases that go unreported. We've got people living in rural areas. We've got people that are too scared to go to the police. So statistically wise, it is very difficult to say how many children go missing. But if you look at some of the changes, back then, we used to actually teach our children stranger danger. Yes, stranger danger is still a major factor, but today's we're looking at people that the children actually know, family members, family friends, people within the communities. So things have changed. Things have become online, especially after lockdown. Children have been exposed more to online, you know, social media sites, for instance, and online gaming, where the predators are actually luring our children and grooming them over a period of time. So many things have changed, and the increasing number of cases yearly is quite shocking. Then we also sit with human trafficking that has escalated, and also kidnappings have become quite a big problem in South Africa.
Kidnappings for ransom have become terrifyingly common among adult victims. And although we may not be hearing about it much in the media, I wondered whether Bianca was seeing a trend of this same type of crime with child victims too.
Adults, definitely. We see, because it's a low-risk, high-reward type of crime, it's an easy turnaround, money-making thing for these syndicates. So we do see a lot of ransom demand cases. Children, not as much as adults, but our children are more vulnerable to opportunistic kidnappings, for instance, where a child would actually be taken, raped, and murdered, or either being sold into trafficking or exploited by their own family. So children are more vulnerable to that, where we're seeing, yes, we've had ransom demand cases where children have been involved, but the majority of these ransom demand cases are adults.
That is certainly good to hear. Children are vulnerable enough as it is, and we certainly don't need them also becoming frequent victims of kidnapping for ransom. I think that the Dabbers case highlighted once again that missing child cases don't always look the way we expect them to. Television has created this image in our mind of what child abductions look like, and they're almost always the scene where a child is walking home from school and gets lured into a van by a complete stranger. And this is not representative of the reality. Human trafficking is also often very specifically framed in television and in fictionalized stories, and that frame is also often not accurate. I asked Bianca how these entertainment-based impressions match up with what she sees on a daily basis.
No, not at all. So unfortunately, these movies and everything we see on TV has put a stigma to how human trafficking actually works. What we actually are seeing is children not being snatched off the street like people tend to believe they do. Yes, there are some cases that do happen like that, but these children are actually lured. They're groomed over a period of time, especially on social media. Even young adults being lured by false job advertisements, for instance, meeting up to have an interview and then disappearing. So there's a more an online presence when it comes to human trafficking. If we look at exploitation of children, unfortunately, we also see parents being involved with that. So it's not necessarily that a child has been taken and shipped overseas. The child is actually exploited but still stay at home. We actually do see this maybe on a daily basis where children are standing on street corners begging. So we do see these begging rings where children are begging for money. They're exploited as drug traffickers or sex workers. So yes, there's different types of human trafficking if we look at the scenarios and what we are seeing currently.
That reminded me of the episode I did a while back called The Barbershop, where young girls were lured to a property in Springs with offers of free training to become hairdressers. And when they arrived there, they were drugged, raped, and forced into the sex trade.
We do get that a lot, especially the job offers. That is a trending online thing at the moment, especially young, vulnerable women that's just finished school. We've also had a case, just to give an example, of a girl that was lured on a modeling site. And she ended up in Dubai, and luckily for her, she was able to escape. But when she got there, they took her passport, all her paperwork, and she was used as a sex slave. But luckily, she was able to escape. She went to the South African embassy there, and she was one of the lucky ones that could actually be saved and brought back home. Because as you know, human trafficking victims, only 1% of human trafficking worldwide is ever found.
1%. Of human trafficking victims internationally are ever recovered. That is a terrifying statistic. I did a whole series of episodes on human trafficking on the podcast, And I think it's worthwhile reminding ourselves of the many reasons why and how children can be trafficked. It's certainly not just for sexual exploitation. Forced labor is another big reason. Like Bianca mentioned, this could look like groups of children begging on the street, and this might be more common in coastal areas where there are lots of restaurants together. You'll also often see groups of children performing dance routines for money. I had to break it to my neighbors the other day that this is very likely a form of trafficking. Other forms of forced labor include cleaning and working in factories. Children could also be trafficked in dodgy sport contracts. Parents think they're sending their child off to embrace an amazing soccer opportunity overseas, for instance. But when the child gets there, their passport is taken, and the vast majority of the money earned goes to the trafficker. Organ harvesting is another very dark reason for trafficking of children. The reasons are almost endless. And while this trafficking does often happen over international borders, it also does happen interprovincially. The Dabba case, on which Stolen Girl is based, of course, involves parental abduction. And it's a topic we don't often see discussed as much as it should be, in my opinion. I asked Bianca what her experiences have been with cases of this nature.
We do get a lot of reports of parental abduction, but this is also something, it's a very tricky thing. So depending on whether there is a custody agreement, a court order in place, whether a parental abduction case can actually be opened. Mm-hmm. We unfortunately do see this quite often where there's no paperwork in place and then the police will not see it as a parental abduction, because they do see the child being either with the biological mother or father and no harm is done to the child. We do also often see this where it is marriages where a person comes from a different country and they actually flee South Africa with the child. And unfortunately, because there's no paperwork in place, nothing can be done. So this is something that we urge people to please make sure that they've got, and that is all the custody arrangements in place, the court orders, everything that is necessary. If you do find yourself in a situation like that, that you've got your paperwork in place. We do see this also a lot of times where there are divorces going on, especially when the children are stuck in the middle. But at that point, it's not yet a parental abduction because there's no paperwork in place. So this is more of a civil matter than actually a missing persons case.
So that is a very important point with regard to parental abduction. If you're a person who has had a child with your partner, each of you have equal legal rights to time with that child. The only thing that can change this is either a court order or one parent legally signing away their parental rights. And without anything legally administering the structure of custody with that child, you as a parent are pretty much entitled to take your child wherever you want for as long as you want. So if you've just separated from your partner and you think you amicably agreed to certain custody arrangements verbally, but haven't actually formalized that legally, the police can actually do very little if your ex-partner decides to go on a 3-week holiday with your child, for instance, without your consent. They are their legal guardian, as much as you are. And if there's no proof that the child is in any imminent danger, it's just a case of a child being with their parents. So this is why, as Bianca says, if you're in a situation where you're separated from your child's other parents, you need to ensure you have everything related to custody agreements documented and at hand. And in my opinion, even if you think your split has been amicable and your self-determined custody arrangement is all good, I don't know if I would take that risk. If there's anything we've learned in the true crime world, it's that you don't really know anyone until the mask comes off. So for everyone's peace of mind, it's definitely better to always have these agreements documented. And if you do find yourself in a situation where your ex-partner is withholding your child outside of the agreed custody terms, follow the same procedure to open a missing persons case as I described earlier. But make sure you have all your paperwork with you.
So we only assist once a case has been opened with the police, whether it's a missing persons case, a kidnapping case, or parental abduction case. We do need a case number for us to actually be able to assist. So that is why we urge people to make sure that you've got your paperwork in place, that if there's something that happens, that we can actually assist. And I think it's something that people don't think about. They just accept the fact that it will never happen. But unfortunately, it can happen. So make sure, even though there's no issues between the mom and the dad, make sure you've got your paperwork in place, because it just makes it so much difficult for us to intervene if we don't have the case that has been opened with the police. Otherwise, it's a whole story to go through to the family court, get the paperwork in place, and then only the case can be opened. And that takes time. So when time lapses, it makes it even more difficult to find the child. And especially when it's cases where the mother or the father comes from a different country and they've gone over the border, it makes it very difficult. But that's also where the laws have changed when it comes to traveling with a child, where the necessary documentation needs to be in place. Both parents need to be signed on the documentation, the unabridged birth certificate. So just all those things need to be in place.
As Bianca says, prevention is far better than cure. So I asked what tips she could give parents and other child caregivers out there to help keep their children safe from a possible abduction scenario.
Firstly, and the most importantly, and something that we are seeing and educating our children and parents, are social media safety. So we urge parents to please monitor your children's social media use. Look what they're busy with. See what they're posting, who they're speaking to, who are they adding as friends. Even the online gaming sites, see what messages are being sent. The majority of the time, between a child and a perpetrator, there are sexual messages being sent, they are being groomed, and the children are actually keeping this away from their parents. So there's a thing like Google Family Link that parents can actually download. They can see exactly and monitor what their children are busy with. Then also our very little children, our young ones, always keep an eye on them. I mean, they're very inquisitive, especially going to our shopping malls. They tend to run off within 2 seconds to a toy aisle just because they're purely inquisitive, but they can disappear so quickly. So one of the things that we always say to parents with young children, dress them in brightly colored clothes when going out. Make sure they are easily spotted in a crowd of people. Also, set a meeting point. If you do get separated, that you know exactly where to meet up if you do get separated. Also, teach your children where their nearest police station is, for instance, or the local clinic or your local hospital, that if they do wander off and get lost, they know exactly where to go and actually seek assistance. We've got great safety tips available on our website. It's missingchildren.org.za. We've got safety tips for parents, safety tips for children. We've got school holiday safety tips. And yes, we've also got interactive learning material, especially for our young children, where it's storybooks and coloring in books, where because a child doesn't always understand when speaking to them and they tend to have their attention drawn somewhere else. So the interactive learning material we see works wonders with young children. They color in a picture, and with the picture, there's actually a safety tip. So that's how we get to teach them from a young age on how to keep themselves safe.
I think those are such incredible, useful tips. And I highly recommend heading over to Missing Children South Africa's website and checking out those resources. I have in my research for this, and I also noticed another resource that they have, which is called an interim ID kit. I asked Bianca about that too, and how they recommend it to be used.
Yes, so that's what we call an interim ID kit. So it's a form that can be filled in with all your child's details. You can have your child's fingerprinting done at your local police station, We do ask parents to update these documents 6 months to a year every time, because a child changes, their height changes, their hair color changes maybe, their weight changes, they get older, so the photo needs to be changed. But that is literally all the information that you need when having to go open a missing persons case. So what we do is we ask parents to actually fill in two of them. One you keep at home and the other one you actually keep in your handbag with you when traveling with your child. I know people think it will never happen to them, but unfortunately it does. It can happen to anyone at any time, anywhere. So rather be prepared, know you've got everything in place, know your safety tips, teach your children how to keep safe, have the interim ID kit on hand with you, and you know that you've taken all measures to keep your child safe.
When I was looking at those ID kits, I also thought about the many cases I've covered where parents from less resourced backgrounds don't have updated photographs of their children. So this could be a way as well for those of us who do have access to more resources to help those parents who don't and keep their children safe as well.
Yes, definitely. We've had cases like that where we've had no photo of a child. We had to assist. And just to give an example, the one mother actually literally drew a pencil sketch of her child for us. Luckily, we were actually able to get a CCTV footage where we could actually get the child's face, because it makes it so difficult to look for a child, but you don't actually even know what they look like. This interim ID kit is downloadable, so we actually promote schools to download it and actually get the police to come to school, actually do the fingerprinting, to fill in the forms at school and send it home to the parents. So no one else is allowed to keep those forms except the parents. So I know a lot of parents don't have means and ways of printing. They don't have photos, but we do encourage the schools to actually do it, because a lot of schools do have school photos of the children. So we encourage them to download it, fill in the form at school, and send that form home to the parent for safekeeping.
So if you are a person who's working in a school or other environment where you're regularly engaging with large groups of children, why not bring this up to the parents as something you could arrange to do for everyone? Download the form from Missing Children South Africa's website, and you can even make a fun day of it so that the kids don't necessarily leave feeling fearful, but they do feel empowered. Your local police station may even be willing to send someone out to chat with the kids about safety tips. And it's a great way to get kids thinking about safety. And for the older kids, maybe also a strong focus on online safety as well. Children from less resourced backgrounds are often more vulnerable than those from more resourced homes. Not because their parents don't care for them just as much, but because they simply don't have access to the same tools other people might.
No, definitely. And I think people tend to think that it's just, it has to be there. Why isn't it there? But there's a lot of cases and a lot of situations where people actually literally have nothing, and their children are just as vulnerable as any other child to go missing. And they don't have the means and ways that privileged people do. They don't have those photos. They don't have the contacts that they need. They don't have the money, for instance. And that is also where we as an organization come in, because our services are rendered absolutely free to anyone that is in need of our help. So there's no money involved, because a lot of times people don't have the money to get a private investigator to assist them. So who's going to assist those that don't have the money to do so?
And while we can all play a positive role in helping to keep children safe, I also often wonder about the public's role in existing missing children cases, and how sometimes members of the public can actually do more damage than good to a case if they're not careful. I asked Bianca how the public can safely play a valuable role in these cases.
Okay, so this is actually a very important question, because I'm going to take the Jocelyn Smith case as a very good example of this. The public plays a very important role when it comes to creating the awareness and spreading of a flyer of a missing child. But when it comes to sharing, please share. Don't comment on social media. Don't put in your own little story or theory or anything like that, because it takes us off the investigation. It puts us on different leads that is not needed and wasting our time. The other thing when it comes to helping, when it comes to a child that's missing, a search party, please do so under the police instruction. Don't go out by yourself and just go search. This is very important because there could be evidence that can be tampered with. We've seen it with the Jocelyn case too. That was, people were just searching everywhere and all over the show, but it needs to be under police control so that there's no evidence that gets lost, and also that it's in a controlled environment when it comes to searching for a missing child. Our flyers are available on social media, on X and also on Facebook. So please help us by sharing the flyer and just creating the awareness. The more the flyer gets shared, the broader the people, the public is that actually see it. And maybe someone actually has seen something, knows something. We've got a 24-hour emergency line. Please let us know either on WhatsApp or give us a call and we'll follow up on that lead.
I get a lot of flack on the podcast social media platforms because I do not allow missing person posters of minors to be shared without a case number. And I always strongly advise parents not to use their own cell phone number on flyers that they've made themselves. Bianca weighs in on whether these are valid concerns.
Okay, so that is also an important topic that we are trying to get out to the general public is please do not go on social media, put out your own post with your private cell phone numbers. This is causing a lot of problems for us, especially with extortion cases. We do see a lot of missing cases where it's actually turned to extortion. People will phone the family, they'll tell them they've got some information, but they need to pay them an X amount of money. So please work through a legitimate organization. Us as Missing Children South Africa, don't put a case out unless we've got the case from the police, we've verified the case, and we've got the OB or the inquiry number. As you just said, you don't put this on WhatsApp groups unless it is a legitimate case and it has been verified. We do see, I know when a parent is in shock, when a child has gone missing, you want to jump and you want to do everything possible, but please take those few minutes to do it in the right way, because a lot of people are getting extorted by putting out their own posts on social media.
And the other side of this is when hopefully the child or teenager is found safely. Now they have the added trauma of seeing their poster continue to be circulated everywhere because they're all uncontrolled sources. And there's no way to terminate that.
Definitely. And also with these private posts that people are putting out, that it keeps on getting shared, as you said, after a child has been found. So within the organization with us, as soon as a child or a person has been found, we take down the missing flyer and a found flyer is posted to actually make sure that the missing flyer doesn't get reshared and people still think that that child or person is still missing. Mm. When it comes to our children, it is also very traumatic for them to actually see their face out on social media, especially with the private posts. People will tend to comment they've got, and also turns kind of to bullying at school when a child has gone missing and they go back to school after being found, that, you know, the children there have seen this child going missing. They've seen the flyer on social media, for instance, and the child gets bullied about what happened to them.
With regard to international child abduction, we are in a fortunate position that South Africa is a party state of the Hague Convention on Civil Aspects of International Child Abduction, an international treaty aimed at preventing the removal of a child from the jurisdiction in which he or she normally resides by a parent or caregiver without the consent of the other parent or caregiver, and to facilitate the return of the child wrongfully removed. South Africa ratified the convention in 1996, and it came into operation on the 1st of October 1997. The purpose of the convention is to secure the prompt return of any child wrongfully removed to or retained in a contracted state. The convention binds member states to assist the parent or person left behind. by providing a simplified procedure and additional remedies to those seeking the return of a child who's been wrongfully removed or retained. The convention aims to curb international abductions of children. 103 countries are party to this convention. And so if your child were unlawfully removed to a country which is party, the convention would require that both party countries work together to return the child home. In Maureen Dabber's case, although the United States is party to the convention, neither Syria nor Saudi Arabia are, so the convention meant nothing to her legal process. In South Africa, if you find yourself in a situation where your child has been removed to a non-party country, the High Court would be the place for application to be made for a court order. But we know how well that went in Maureen's case. We've seen several cases come up in our courts in the last few years related to parents wanting to relocate to other countries and take their child with them. While the Children's Act does not specifically grant any rights to a child regarding relocation specifically, it does state that if a child is to relocate with one parent to another country, the other parents must be in agreement, because of course this impacts the other parent's rights to shared custody. Historically, the courts have been quite strict on this, and the parent that wants to leave the country really has to prove beyond all doubts that them not leaving the country would greatly prejudice both them and their child. To view a list of the countries which are party to the Hague Convention on Civil Aspects of International Child Abduction, you can visit hcch.net and view the status table in the Instruments tab. I'd like to thank Bianca van Aswegen for her vital contributions to this episode. You can access all of the resources we've discussed in this episode by going to missingchildren.org.za. I highly recommend following Missing Children South Africa on all of their social media channels and sharing posters of the missing from there. In addition, if you or your company would like to contribute to the vital work Missing Children South Africa does, I know they would greatly appreciate that, as the organization does not receive any government funding and they rely on donations to continue their important work. The idea of a missing child is likely one of the most horrendous any of us can conjure. Not knowing where your child is, whether they're being cared for or what they're experiencing, is probably one of the worst experiences any parent can go through. As you've heard in this episode, though, there are actions that can be taken to mitigate the possibility that this will happen to you. And if it does, to ensure that you take swift and determined action that will significantly improve the chances of your child being returned safely. Children go missing every day. And it would be easy for us to bury our heads in the sand and pretend it will never happen to us. Or we can take action and take simple and decisive steps to do what we can to prevent that from happening. I would like to thank Filmfinity for coming up with the idea of using the release of the movie Stolen Girl to highlight this important issue in South Africa. We need more businesses who are willing to take strong stances and position even entertainment products as important educational tools. Finally, True Crime South Africa listeners, let's keep the conversation about missing children going. If you're on the podcast socials, feel free to comment with your own tips on keeping children safe. And also, if you do implement some of the tips you've heard in this episode, let me know about that too. I'd love to know what you're doing to help keep South Africa's children safe. As we come to the end of this companion podcast, if you haven't already gone to watch Stolen Girl, I highly recommend you do. The movie is in cinemas nationwide right now and is an incredible viewing experience. I hope to be back in your ears with future companion podcasts on other movies based on real-life stories. I'll chat to you soon.